I'm speaking today with Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee of the 18th Congressional District. Congresswoman, thank you for speaking to me today. You know, you've been in office since you were elected in 1994. When you look back on your time in office, what would you say were, have been your, say, two or three biggest accomplishments, that stuff you're most proud of?
I think bringing jobs back to this community over a long period of time, starting first with the reconstruction of Sims Bayou when that area was in my congressional district. Sims Bayou, some 20 years ago, was an unattended bayou that flooded the area extensively, and we worked for a number of years to bring not only millions of dollars, but to also provide the opportunity for the Army Corps of Engineers and a lot of subcontractors that they utilize to fix Sims Bayou. Now it is a completely changed area and a completely, I should say, low flooding area. You never say no in this community on the issue of flooding because of where we are. Also, my work continuously on infrastructure projects where I've been able to engage what we call community development corporations, CDCs, which really have proliferated in this city. And so I've worked with CDCs in the Northeast, providing them with $750,000 for infrastructure work. I've provided the Heights community with money that addresses their Esplanade. That's work. That's also beautification. I was the first person to help jumpstart the hike and bike trail. That's really a marker when I've had the privilege of cutting the ribbon now on at least four or five and more to come in this community. And then when it comes to people issues and education, I'm most proud of the work that we've done with the University of Houston, providing them any number of energy modification earmarks, if you will, as they move toward developing their Tier 1 university and the focus on energy production, alternative energy. We have worked with them. We're working with them again and seeking more funding, so we brought in millions of dollars on that issue. And then when Storm Allison hit and literally wiped out their law library, we brought the Secretary of Education, we worked with FEMA, so that they would have their dollars and be able to recover quickly so that law school could be up and running. It's an idea of making federal dollars work for you. Texas Southern University, two very specific issues with them. Texas Southern University, historically black college, was founded by Heman Sweat because African Americans were not allowed in the University of Texas School of Law. Here comes Texas Southern University living in a desegregated life and style in terms of funding. And they had a 20-year desegregation lawsuit that was not moving, was not being settled, and was really stymieing the school. In the waning hours of the Clinton administration, I worked with then Assistant Secretary Raymond Pierce. We settled this lawsuit, which then instructed the state of Texas to have to repay or to provide, in essence, reimbursement over the years of monies that Texas Southern University and Prairie View A&M lost. And those dollars were matched. And you will see a lot of beautiful structures on the university's campus pursuant to that desegregation case being settled. Over the years, they've had some ups and downs on federal student loan financial aid. We work for now probably about 10 or 11 years to extinguish a $16 million debt, which would take away from TSU being able to provide scholarships for students. As I worked through the Clinton administration, the Bush administration, when representations were made that there was going to be a settlement, finally I grabbed hold of the new Secretary of Education to look at the facts, see that we had complied with what their requests were, that we had reached a settlement, but no one was moving on it. They took it up. They even acknowledged that this needs to be fixed. And within months in the spring, we're able to acknowledge that that $11 million debt for Texas Southern University went away. Anyone knows what $11 million for a public school does for them and what it does for them when they don't have to pay it. It is amazing where dollars now can go for students because of that. So I think I would characterize the broadness of my work with working to help make federal dollars work in Houston. And cops on the beat dollars, Houston has been very, very strong in the past, and we're now working to put them back on the map for new police dollars to help with overtime and extra police cadets. Homeland Security, I have provided funding in collaboration for the port, huge amounts of dollars for the airport, but more importantly, as the chair of the Transportation Security Committee on Security, I am a go-to person for fixing security problems at the airports. I've been able to get more inspectors that come when you come in from overseas, or get TSO officers. As I close on that note, it is hopefully fixing problems, bringing federal resources, answering the concerns of my constituents.
And if you look back at this current session of Congress, how would you evaluate the job that this Congress has done in dealing with the priorities that the nation faces and just generally getting things done?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, because I'm in the People's House, the United States House of Representatives, and the Founding Fathers thought it was a wise approach to have checks and balances even among the Congress. And so the House and the Senate have different responsibilities, and I want to give the House an A+. We immediately passed the pay equity bill, the Linbetter bill, immediately passed that as we came into the United States Congress under the leadership of our president in the executive. We have passed energy reform. We passed out of the House my bill, H.R. 2200, which is a complete reparation of the mass transit system by adding more security to the normal transit system, which we don't have compared to airports. We focus all of our attention after 9/11 on airlines and airports, and after seeing what happened in Spain and elsewhere, we know trains are a target too. That bill has been passed out of the House. We've passed a major jobs initiative bill that will bring millions of jobs and provide job skill training and empower Houston Community College with large sums of money to retrain people for green jobs. We passed a stimulus bill that has helped to bring $44 million, among other dollars, but I'm really proud of this niche, $44 million in what we call weatherization dollars, right into my congressional district, into this arena. And those dollars, I've seen them work. I've gone to a senior's house. I've called on the phone to the weatherization office in the city of Houston using federal dollars, and I've seen what difference it makes when it comes, and they come out to a shambling, leaning senior citizen house and begins to fix doors and windows to ensure that they have cool in the summer and hot in the wintertime. So I believe the House of Representatives has moved expeditiously. Our rules are different, but we have constantly been doing the agenda that we ran on in 2008. And obviously, we spent a lot of time working on health care. I am a vice chair of the Progressive Caucus, proudly so, and was named one of the negotiators for the health bill. I've spent more hours in health care meetings than I can probably count. And I was a major supporter of the public option and forming it in the way that we thought would be successful. In May, we thought it was dead. When we came back from our hearings, it was reborn again, because we found that people wanted a public option. Time is a bad element on trying to get legislation passed, meaning that the more time it allows people to generate negative arguments. So the House bill compromised and put language in to expand Medicare to up to 55. We passed that bill. It has provisions that eliminate pre-existing disease to keep you from getting insurance. It has a wonderful provision about taking away the antitrust exemption for insurance companies, health insurance companies, which is killing the average consumer, because what that means is no competition and rates can go up and up and up. One of the major points, it insures 36 to 40 million people. It improves and increases the CHIPS program. So we have a long list. My final sentence is that the Senate is different. There is a 60-vote requirement of a filibuster, and that's why I've signed on to legislation to eliminate the filibuster, because I know that the Founding Fathers wanted to make sure they had a tight system, but this now may be a system of detraction. Let people stand up and oppose it. Let it be a vote of the majority, and, of course, a majority all the time has to include members of the other party. You never have so many that you wouldn't have to include members of the other party. For that reason, I think that the Congress, the House, has done what it's supposed to do. I think the American people have to understand that rules, which they have not voted on, are what has kept the Senate Democrats from carrying forward on visions that they have, and including some Republicans. I expect that someone is going to get the point that listening to the American people means that we should act, and we have to take the results of that action. My belief is that an understandable health care bill, for example, will pass and that Americans will understand it when they begin to feel the impact of good health care and lower premiums for their families.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about that. As we speak today, the fate of health care in the Congress is unsettled. You know, the result of the special election in Massachusetts, which gave the Republicans a 41st senator, you know, the House passed its bill, the Senate passed its bill, the two chambers were in negotiations. It is unclear what will happen with that. Among the possible approaches that people have suggested is for the House to simply take the existing Senate bill and pass it, because then it would just go straight to the President for a signature, and then possibly deal with some of the differences that, in particular, the Progressive Caucus didn't like later in reconciliation. There have been some other approaches suggested, like trying piecemeal, scaling down, or just starting over from scratch. I would like to know specifically, do you endorse the idea of passing the Senate bill, or do you prefer a different approach?
Well, I prefer making sure the American people have the best health care reform that they can. There's no doubt that I believe the House bill is the bill that should be passed. If in the negotiation process, the Senate bill can be tinkered with so that the vote of the Senate bill has some of the harsher components out. For example, it doesn't have the antitrust exemption, and eliminating the antitrust exemption, which is a real boost to the American people as it relates to consumer issues. It doesn't protect what we call physician-owned hospitals, which are multiple in this community, like St. Joseph's, the Texas Heart Institute, and many others. My argument would be that we must have a health care bill. Prefer the House, but we're now in negotiations and sort of refining the umbrella Senate bill. If that proves positive, I could vote for a Senate bill and look to not only working in reconciliation, which is questionable on that particular technique, but I realize that this bill could be modified in years to come, next year, the year after. But we have to get something in the hands of the American people so they can see that the main cost of health care, their premiums, are coming down.
Okay. The talk now is also on focusing on jobs. You know, it's very easy to talk about, you know, like we're going to, how the Congress is going to focus on jobs, but, you know, what specifically needs to be done? What specifically needs to be in a jobs-related bill in order to actually improve the unemployment situation? What do you want to see in any jobs-related legislation that the Congress is going to be working on?
One of the main issues that we've been pushing is that jobs funding comes to municipalities and not go through state governments, which have traditionally had to be subjected to the whims of governors.
Well, we don't know anything about that in this state.
The hurt and pain of unemployment is really in jurisdictions like Houston that has had some of the highest unemployment overall over these last couple of months, even though know that we have, in essence, done better than some other areas around the nation. We still have experienced it. Over the summer, when I started to job fairs, it was because there were numbers of people who were going off unemployment. So I think, first of all, the federal funding should come to jurisdictions. Then we should focus on skills training. A lot of the skills training have been focusing on green energy. That is a reality. Houston may, in fact, be the wind energy capital of the world, a number of wind energy companies, and so we need to train people in these alternative energy type jobs. The other part is that we need to be able to provide people with an income while they are trained. So if you're on unemployment insurance, I'd like for you to be able to keep it. I have a stipend or a scholarship for jobs training. In essence, that's somewhat of an income, and when you come out on the other side of your training, you then are eligible for that kind of work. I also believe that the new Metro dollars should have a very large component. Part of it is to build the mobility system. I think the other part of it should be to train people to work on the system, even through its construction and through its operating. So I think a jobs bill has to be relevant to the particular area. It has to be enough money in it to make it work. It should be utilized with partnerships like our universities, our community colleges. We need to look at our high schools and determine whether or not, as years pass, people can graduate with a high school diploma and be ready for work. We have to begin to look creatively about how we face this jobs question. It needs to have enough money in it to make it work. And it needs to focus on the chronically unemployed and the hard-to-serve areas. And the funding needs to come to those areas, and we need to be in those areas on the ground having training facilities there. Lastly, we need to not forget about our youth unemployment. And last summer I was able to help bring in $14 million. Part of that was stimulus dollars. We were not successful in 2008. We could not get the Bush administration to provide for summer youth jobs, and that is a major infusion into the economy and also helps get young people off of the unemployment rolls in the summer and also not taking jobs from other individuals, families, persons who need to support families. So I would support a very large component of summer youth job funding that will help college students and high school students as well find work.
Okay. There's also been a lot of talk lately about, well, federal budget deficit. You know, a lot of that was inherited, of course. People have expressed concerns about, you know, the fact that it's growing. What is the approach that Congress should be taking? And, you know, how much emphasis should be on worrying about the deficit versus worrying about the economy?
Well, there are economists who agree with what I'm about to say, is that in this time of need with growing unemployment, our focus should be with churning the economy. It should be getting the financial markets back in order, getting our banks not hoarding money, if you will, and using the stimulus dollars that we've given them to provide dollars to small businesses, which in essence churns the economy by creating more jobs. We've listened to economists who've said that the deficit should not be the priority. We should worry about it. I am worried about it. But I know that it is something that will not go away and that we will have to pay it down. We did it during the 8 years before the Bush administration. When that administration ended, meaning the previous one to the last Bush administration, we had at least $500 billion in surplus in our account because we were churning the economy, we were creating jobs, people were paying, if you will, their share of the federal income tax, the businesses were producing, and we were investing in our nation. It's important now to create jobs, to invest in the infrastructure, which will also create jobs. The jobs bill has to be partnership with fixing sewer lines, aging bridges and highways, making sure that we have roads and streets in our communities that don't hold water, that we can fix the areas that have not been fortunate enough to get monies, flood monies. We know Buffalo Bayou is under rebuild. We know a number of our bayous that are in my area, Greens Bayou, that are under operation, under construction, if you will. We need to be able to continue that. So the deficit is here. It's not something that I'm very happy with, but I'd much rather move toward putting Americans back to work, Houstonians back to work, Texans back to work, that the economy of each churning, and then finding a way to make good on our promise to bring down the deficit. And I think there are many economists that would agree with me on that.
Okay. The president recently proposed some fees and new regulations on the big banks in response to the TARP money and just other issues having to do with the banks and their role in the economic collapse. Do you believe what the president has proposed is sufficient, and or what else would you like to see done?
It's a work in progress, and we are trying to make sizable steps on the attitude of the financial markets and their leaders. Taxing, compensation, excessive bonuses. But I would like to see actual language written in, because we've tried to do this by cajoling and coaching, and word incentives. What I hear most when I come home is that small businesses do not have access to credit. People with ideas don't have access to credit. And if that had happened to Bill Gates, the founder of Google, we asked ourselves, where would we be? You have to have access to credit. And I believe it is important for our banks to have a written provision that there should be a sizable portion of their portfolio that has to have funding for small business efforts. Certainly they need to follow the normal vetting processes. I think they need to stretch their imagination to help those ideas that may sound a little advanced, or to help businesses that may not be as well endowed financially, because that's how you build the economy, by building these businesses and helping them to grow. So that's one of the areas that I'd like to see expanded. And as well, I'd like to see a more responsible mortgage lending component. The homeowners who secured these loans basically took loans because they were given by the banks. Now we have to clean it all up. We've cleaned out some because of all the large foreclosures. Those who are still having mortgages, I think we're in the climate now that we can work out these mortgages, let them pay either over a longer period of time that brings down their monthly mortgage, or find a way to lower the interest. Those homeowners who are holding on now, we need to try and hold on to them. Abandoned houses, foreclosed houses, does nothing but lower the interest rate, lower the value of the homes in the neighborhood. And it does nothing for property values in the city. It does nothing for taxation in the city. They're empty homes. So I'd like to see the financial system that entertains the idea of deficit, recognize that it exists, but builds on the small business economy, which I think is one of the strongest ways of stimulating our economy and keeping the doors open. I'd also like that we try to keep people in business rather than closing businesses. And I have been working very hard with the communities and the nation's automobile dealerships, really one of the largest components of small businesses. These individuals own these dealerships, and they got the short end of the stick when GM and Chrysler and others were bought out. The dealers who were working and selling cars got the backhand. I believe they need to be helped as well. So I think there are many ways that we can look at creating jobs and keeping jobs going forward.
Okay. You are on the Homeland Security Committee. What's your assessment of the response to the so-called underpants bomber from Christmas?
We can do better. I think it builds on our response to the captain at Fort Hood. That was a horrific tragedy, but I was outraged about it because there was no reason to profile Captain Hussein. His behavioral actions clearly signaled that something was wrong. There were enough people in Bethesda, there were enough people at Fort Hood that said that his actions and his words were that something was wrong, and that there may have been intentions that would have jeopardized his fellow workers. I build on that to say that the behavioral attitudes or actions of the perpetrator on that Christmas Day left a trail of why not, so what happened, so why didn't you stop? He bought his ticket one way. Someone says it was two-way, so the information is not as clear. He bought it in cash. His father came and indicated that he was affiliating with individuals who were involved in the terrorist community, that he was going to Yemen. Just a lot of actions that should have raised a red flag to have gotten him on the no-fly list. So I have had, as the chairwoman of this committee, we've held hearings. I'm putting legislation forward to increase the number of air marshals. Also legislation to focus on human intelligence, behavioral assessment, which is really the way to get in front of terrorist acts. And then we are engaged in Yemen to say that the numbers of terrorists that they have in Yemen have to be watched. They have to take ownership and responsibility for the acts of these people who are leaving their country and doing dastardly things. So we need to do better. Body scanners, protecting people's privacy, but we've had reports on those body scanners. They're not as intrusive as one might think, but we want to make sure people feel comfortable, but they also have to be safe. So we want to use new technology. So have we done everything that we should have done? No. The Transportation Security Administration administrator has been blocked by the Senate for all of these months, and now unfortunately he has withdrawn. I asked the President to look at, in the future, recess appointments, because we need all of the people who would have to, the leadership capability to lead components of the Homeland Security Department. So we have to do much better, and we have to work together and use tools that we've learned that we have to use post 9/11.
How would you assess President Obama's first year in office?
Well, I think he has laid out a roadmap that the Congress accepts, and he has no doubt been, I think, one of the hardest working presidents that you've ever seen. He's not afraid of speaking to the American people. He's not afraid of taking on hard issues. And so how do I rate him? Through his leadership, we have passed all the bills in the House of Representatives that he campaigned on, from pay parity to education bills to energy reform bill to health care. It's been a tough year. We've had terrorist acts. We've been fortunate. They've not been at the level of 9/11, but they are terrorist acts all the well. They are acts that you can see that might have been detrimental to this nation in a much larger way. We always like to say alleged, and I will say the alleged actor at Fort Hood, the alleged actor on the airplane coming into Detroit. But today, some tape from someone who says Osama bin Laden took credit for that. As we speak, they took credit for this act. So he has had his challenges, but I believe he has had a commitment to this country in bettering it. And change and bettering someone is not always pretty. Sometimes it's uncomfortable, sometimes it's ugly, and he's had to face that. I look forward to the continued interaction, President. He made a commitment that he wanted to move forward on immigration. We've had a meeting with him on immigration reform early on. We are looking to try to educate the American people to get that done. So the hard issues, the president has moved on. He selected excellent cabinet choices. They're all, after some long delay, his cabinet leadership, the secretaries of the cabinet are in. There's bipartisan. He has managed to appoint a stellar jurist who, at least, although they tried, the opposition party, the minority party, Justice Sotomayor has been confirmed. So I do think that things that we've asked him to do, he's been on point. The Congress is a separate body. The president works with the Congress. The Congress works with the president. If there are those in the Congress, in the minority party, who are determined for the president not to be successful, if their media spokespersons are determined for the president not to be successful, then I think he's done very well.
Okay. Just very briefly, immigration. What is your assessment of the status of an immigration reform bill? What do you want to see done in that?
Well, I want us to get started. I served as a ranking member on the immigration subcommittee for 6 years. I'm on the immigration subcommittee now on judiciary. I'm on Homeland Security. All of those have responsibility for immigration reform. What good does it do a country to have a layer of uncounted, unnoted, and frightened people? And that's what we have now. I want comprehensive immigration reform, but I want the American people to be educated, that the process would not have these people get in front of those who've been waiting patiently to be processed. It would be a separate line to give people status once they get in line, present all their papers, that we determine that they're not criminal or have criminal activities. It allows them to be status while they're processed and determine whether they can stay in the country. It allows them to come from under the dark of night. They pay fines. They have to do public service. And people who are working, and others certainly are not competing with Americans. I think that is the way to go, and we're working on legislation that can help reunite families, that can stop deportations, that separates families on simply the grounds that someone unfortunately came in as a child and was not status. It allows these high school students, many of them in Houston, to be able to go to college. We call that the DREAM Act, that'd be part of comprehensive immigration reform. So I'm just looking for stabilizing the economy, stabilizing the lives of these individuals, and educating the American people so that they won't believe that the government is trying to undermine the economy and undermine the jobs market.
When people go to vote this March, you have two opponents in the primary. why should people vote to send you back to Congress for another term?
Well, there's some value in seniority. It's not old. It is wisdom and experience. It's some value, I believe, in someone who knows her district quite extensively, knows both the joys and the pain, and has been able to provide real resources, real tangible dollars to the research of MD Anderson, to Riverside Hospital, to North Forest Independent School District, where we've provided $1 million in STEM dollars, but also dollars to point young people into the business world. So I think and know that the calls of the community, what they needed, as a member of the United States Congress, through their graciousness of reelecting me, I have responded to. I was in church today, and the leader of the church called me a responder, that I would respond when called upon. Now, the other aspect of it, when I spoke about seniority and experience, I chair the Transportation Security Committee and the Infrastructure Protection. That helps me to bring resources to this community for our airports, more transportation security officers, more inspectors. Those are jobs. The work that I've done with local and both county and city governments, both in terms of federal funding. And then the work that comes when this community is in crisis. And we faced Hurricane Katrina and Rita, different forms of crisis, welcoming new citizens in. And it was my idea to secure funding so that during Hurricane Katrina, a massive counseling system could be set up, which was a component of the FEMA funding, to be able to work through the mental state of these terrible incidences that these survivors had gone through. When we had Hurricane Ike, the first time in a number of years that we were on the receiving end, I worked extensively to ensure that the ponds, because I'm over FEMA, I understand it, I work with them to make sure that the points of distribution, that food pods that many people were utilizing, quickly got out into our community. First, within 24 hours, we were serving 60,000 people in the Greens Point area because of the work I collaborated with our leaders here in the community. Why should they send me back? Because I'm responsive as an individual. We expanded our office to have more locations. We're sensitive to the democratic principles and values. Everyone knew my opposition to the Iraq War. I didn't run away from it. I supported the troops, and I stand by that. But I recognized that there were real questions about the Iraq War, and I wasn't afraid to be able to stand up for that. If there is a fight over democratic values, Sheila Jackson Lee is there to both give support and to express her strong view on behalf of those of the 18th Congressional District. So my reason can be captured in the idea that I love change, but I am a change agent. I make things happen. I love working, but when I work, I deliver and get results. And it's all about the people's choice, and that people have a right to make their choice. And I hope that they will look at this record and see someone who has stood by them. And I simply ask them to stand by me as we make our way through the primary and, of course, the early voting period. I'm looking forward to engaging, as I have done, to sharing about our vision and going forward, continuing to pile jobs on and assessing the work of the stimulus dollars as they are now getting into our system and creating jobs. I want to finish one last thing. One of the issues that I've taken up that normally is unpopular is the criminal justice system. And it was my work with the Department of Justice that brought in Justice Department officials to investigate our jail that had been held in one hand, the hands of one, for a long period of time, and really was suffering from a violation of the rights of those who, yes, were incarcerated, many people waiting for a trial, but who had seen just conditions that were not acceptable, loss of life, not enough resources, and we're working through that process now. But I was not afraid to take that on. I'm interested in what we call opportunities to train ex-felons, to let them be with their families. I'm not afraid to take that on. I'm not afraid to take on the juvenile justice system to ensure our young people who are in that system have good mental health assistance so they too can come and integrate out back into society. Women's rights, civil justice issues, economic issues involving our children. That's what I hope people will see in their opportunity to go and vote for me on March 2nd. And I ask for their support.
Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee, thank you very much for speaking to me today.
Thank you for having me.